Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio with live music and some charisma and charm that I think will carry through the radio almost as well as it does at sight, because we have Christina and Michelle Naughton, a.k.a. the Naughton Twins, providing some wonderful artistry during this hour. They're going to be performing this weekend with the Madison Symphony Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And by the way, I'll be giving the pre-concert spiels for those, which is going to double the pleasure for me. And they will be playing the Poulenc Concerto for Two Pianos, Concerto in D minor. And if we ask just right, maybe we'll even hear a little sneak preview of that. Well, welcome to the Midday.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right. So first we have to, I'm not sure that listeners will be able to distinguish, but we have to find out, okay, let's hear from Michelle first.
Hi, I'm Michelle.
And I'm Christina. I don't know if people can distinguish us by voice.
I'm not sure I can.
Yeah, it's pretty close, isn't it? It's pretty close. Well, we're certainly looking forward to these performances, and you have been really moving around the country a lot, performing. Have you? You've performed this Poulenc fairly recently too, haven't you?
Yes, and we will be for this whole month. In fact, both here and abroad, and we're looking forward to it immensely.
He was a composer who had, you know, when I think of Poulenc, I think the first thing I think of is his sense of humor. But there was, of course, a lot more to him than that. But there is a good deal of humor that comes through this concerto, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's such a witty piece on so many levels, not personality-wise, and also the way he put it together, because it's such an infusion of so many different influences. I mean, you can hear things that run the gamut of Indonesian gamelan music to Mozart to Prokofiev, and it all hangs together as one work.
I don't think very many people could have done that.
I would think not. It's intriguing how many composers, by which I mean three or four I can think of, were inspired by gamelan music. And I mean, you know, Western composers like Lou Harrison was one. Another was the Canadian Colin McPhee and Poulenc. And then also Godovsky, I think, wrote music inspired by the gamelan. Can you give us a sense of what it sounds like in Poulenc's
concerto? Sure.
This comes right at the end of the first movement of the concerto. And it goes on like that for actually a minute or
good
two.
Couple minutes, yeah.
It's kind of hypnotic, isn't it?
Yes. Exactly. And it makes even more sense in the context of the piece after all his joking around and just life in general. This part really
a clever way to end the movement.
Yeah.
And to segue into the Mozart segment, which is the next movement.
And before we get to that, the gamelan frequently is played as a duet for two players.
Yes.
And that's kind of interweaving of this hypnotic percussive, lightly percussive texture, very effective in the piano concerto. Are you afraid of anybody falling into a hypnotic spell?
That would be perfect.
Yeah, that would make me happy.
as long as they snap out of it in time for the second movement. And the second movement, I mean, no question. When you hear the first few measures of that, it's, oh, he's thinking Mozart here, at least at the beginning.
Yes, it's like a child song, such a beautiful melody that he so, you know, ingeniously incorporates into the whole work.
But I'm not sure that it's Mozart as such. It's a Mozartian.
Right,
yeah,
not I mean, a direct reference to anything. But it almost sounds like it, but it isn't. Entirely.
Like everyone will think, oh, I've heard that before, but
yeah,
maybe
right.
Not. It's just one of those things that makes you think.
And how does that go? Yeah, first you think, oh, it's going to turn into, let's see, what would it be, almost like the maybe the 21st Piano Concerto or something, and then it turns into something else, and it's not that, and it's Mozart, but not Mozart.
Right.
Now, the movement that of the three, of this concerto that seems to defy description is the final movement has been described as having qualities of Hollywood movie music, and I'm not sure what else. Is there a way even to demonstrate some of that that would give us a sense of it?
Yeah, I mean, the best, I guess, description of this piece is probably the music itself.
It's extremely attractive, I think, the third movement. It puts you in a good mood.
Well, I think all of it does.
And yeah. I mean, not all music necessarily that composers write describe them personally as a person, but this particular piece, I think it works really well, just knowing about Poulenc and his sense of humor and who he was as a person. It makes
it's
so much sense.
Pretty rapid fire. Is it kind of an obstacle course for two pianists?
I bet that maybe that's a good way to describe it. I never thought of it that way.
Kind of the piano equivalent of running through tires.
Yeah, sir. Yeah, the dialogue is quite intricate and unique and yet sophisticated on top of it, but it's just a delight to hear.
Speaking of dialogue, you have said a couple of times that you can be, as twins, you can be brutally frank with each other
yes.
During the practice part, or I presume not during the performance part. So what kind of criticism would you level against each other?
I wouldn't rule anything out, no. I mean, we are definitely, I would say it's a tie for our best critic, between ourselves and our twin. I mean, I trust everything she says, which is why it has such an impact when I hear it. But the good thing about that is that you always know you can believe it, and you know that your sister has your best wishes at heart.
Exactly.
And a lot of it happens non-verbally, I would say.
Really?
A good portion of, yeah, what we... our critique and our entire communication, which is maybe why working together musically works so well for us, and it's why we want to continue doing this. It's a bond that I can't even quite use words to describe.
Well, yes, if you start with the twin bond and the references that you hear sometimes even to this almost telepathic communication between twins, I mean, does it go that far with you?
We don't think we have anything like ESP or you know, anything like that, but it's certainly something very different, but I don't think it's something that you can categorize as being something.
Do you ever practice for a piece that you're going to be playing together? Do you practice separately? I mean, this is where I'm back to this brutally frank department, and I'm wondering how you could even get to that point if you're playing the piece together all the time, or do you separate at some point?
We separate
quite a bit,
actually. We practice the parts separately entirely without each other even hearing it, but then also we have the responsibility of listening to your sister's part entirely by itself and forming an opinion on it, and also gauging how you yourself play based on what you're hearing from your sister and based on what we like and don't like each other playing too. We always have to come to some resolution on that too, and it's a long process.
Is it a long process?
Yes, but we love the process. I mean, this is saying a lot, but given how much we love performing, but we have come to love the process of working on a piece and developing it just as much, I would say, as being on stage performing. It's a different thing, but it's all part of the same growth and why we like what we do so much.
So with the Poulenc, for example, now that you've played it so many times, are you through with the process?
Of course not.
No.
And it's different based on, of course, the orchestra, the audience, the conductor, and we are so happy to have the opportunity to be performing with the Madison Symphony and John Demain, who have meant so much to us over the years, and we know them. It allows for so much more spontaneity and a kind of rapport, I think, on stage that's really special. And, you know, it's this intangible feeling of joy of making music with the people who raised you and formed you and provide so much support throughout your life.
No, are you born Wisconsinites?
Well, close.
I would say we were born in Princeton, New Jersey, but we came here before we were probably like 9 months, so I have to say I don't remember it.
Close enough. But we'll get into some of the early childhood musical experiences that you have talked about, too, which I think is quite charming. But let's hear some of the music that you're going to provide. It's, in this case, Mendelssohn, Andante and Variations in B-flat. And what attracts you to this piece?
This is a piece that Mendelssohn actually wrote to be performed with his sister, which is quite fitting.
Fanny, who was quite the capable pianist also.
Yes. And so, I mean, with composers that we've noticed this, actually, in the case of Mendelssohn and with Mozart, who also had a sister that was a wonderful pianist, they write wonderful, you know, two piano and one piano four-hand duets, and makes us wish that more composers had siblings that were great pianists, because it's you can totally tell by the writing that these people were so familiar with the instrument and what it can do.
And at times I was just hearing little hints of the wedding march in there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's just as much, even more fun, perhaps, to watch and hear. And when you play piano four-hands pieces, I realize you're playing with two pianos this concert this weekend.
Yes.
But when you play piano four-hands pieces, is there a special, what shall we say, advantage, disadvantage to playing one end of the keyboard or the other?
I would say
they're different roles.
Yeah, they're very different, but it's... Four-hand piano is unique in that I think it's the only form of chamber music in which the players actually share an instrument.
Hey, right, it wouldn't work too well with the oboe.
Yeah, probably not. But I think that allows for a special kind of communication as well. In fact, while I was playing, I just lost sight of the fact that there are two of us. I forget where I end and she begins. And this is something that's been happening to us all the time now when we play on four hands, one piano.
What about the person who is more in view of the audience? That would be you, Michelle.
Yes, but it's a very interesting thing, actually, the whole how it works with four-hand piano. We have decided on sticking with... I always play... For four-hand piano, I always play the primo top part, and Christina always plays the secondo, but there's a very specific reason for it, and it mostly has to do with Christina's part, and maybe she can explain a little bit how that works.
It's not really like a formulaic thing I can explain in that way, but it's sort of, oftentimes in four-hand piano, the bass part is what determines the mood of what's being played, and luckily for me, I have a sister who can sense exactly where I am at all times and what direction things are heading in. So, spur of the moment, let's say today I decide there's this one part that I think I could take slightly more sprightly today, or a little bit more bubbly, or today I think it could be a little bit more calm within the confines of what the music allows. She will play her melody differently based on how I choose to play that accompaniment part, and I have a lot of fun with that. So,
do you ever kind of push the envelope a little bit to see how well she can follow?
Think I do. Oh, at times, but that's what makes it fun, and that's how we make new discoveries and things for our future musical development. So
now, as twins, how do you handle the visuals? I mean, you know, you're both playing the same piece at the same instrument. Do you want to look like a unit, or do you want to look like two individuals?
Depends on what part of the music that is, and it's written in a certain way where it's kind of worked
hands
out
on
for
its own.
On
yeah.
its own, yeah.
Yeah, so there were times in the Mendelssohn when your hands, or at least three of the four, we're doing exactly the
exactly.
same thing,
yeah.
Which has a fascination all its own. Is the designation the Naughton twins, is that okay, or is that...
That works.
Is that all right? Okay, I wanted to make sure. You had some very early childhood experiences that you remember, I gather, or at least you've been told about them often
right.
enough that it may be a false memory, but it really happened. Having to do with your aptitude for, or your sensitivity to music.
Yes, maybe we shall start before we were born. when my mom was put on bed rest when she was pregnant with us, she actually listened to Bach's Goldberg Variations all day on, and actually, it's weird because Bach's Goldberg Variations it's like one of our favorite pieces, if not our favorite. And we didn't know that, you know, this had been playing in our
subconscious since before we were born, actually. It wasn't until later I talked to my mom and said something about loving that piece that she actually told me that. But
was it the Glenn Gould number
one? Yes, of course.
The 1955 recording?
Yeah, absolutely.
There was another occasion in which you had been born.
Yes.
And you saw something on television.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Or video.
A whole 2 years later or so. But, yeah, one of the things we loved to do when we were really little kids was to watch films with videos of kids singing on them, which maybe that indicates a love of music in retrospect, but we didn't really... I don't think anyone thought about that at the time. But, well, we were watching this one film, and there came this point where a little girl was looking at the stars... And sort of a sad song started playing, and my mom was in the other room, and midway through the song, she looks over and sees that there are tears rolling down the cheeks of the two of us. And she thought to herself, well, music must mean something to them. But later that night, apparently she wanted to show my dad what had happened, and she replayed the film. And the minute the song came on, I guess we just darted out of the room. We were done being sad, so, yeah.
Well, when you play the Spulank, I don't think there are any sad measures in it at all that we'll hear
There's
this weekend.
Some are there? Sad clown-like.
Ah. Well, that'd elements. Be very French, wouldn't it?
Yes, it's a different kind of sad. Sadness. Not weepy. It's, yeah, best way to describe it. Sad clown.
Well, this Schubert piece that you have next for us, this... Lebensstürme.
life's
storms, yes. I don't know if it'll have sad moments, but it'll certainly have
absolutely.
Turbulence.
Yes, absolutely.
This is one of his last pieces, from what I can tell.
Yes.
Life's Storm, Lebensstürme, in A minor, played by Christina and Michelle Naughton, my guests during the midday today. And it didn't seem to have the hand crossing that Schubert is so fond of.
Yeah, this one's written pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward. Maybe not as the hand crossing might be a more playful thing on his part, and I think this was
not exactly
playful. Pretty intense for 12 minutes. Having heard Mendelssohn, having heard some Schubert now, you'd think that we're going to do an all-romantic show, but we're going to take a hard left turn here.
Yes.
What do you find attractive in the sonatine of Nancaro? Is it Conlan Nancaro?
Yes. Yes, this piece is it's fascinating because it's, like many of his works, it's actually written also for player piano, which makes it, for a human, almost virtually impossible. And I mean, that's what makes it fun. But you can also add things, a dimension that I think electronic music can't quite make. There's colors. It can actually be almost moving and very jazzy.
Conlan Nancaro, Sonatine, and... You had plenty of hand crossing in that one. In that first movement in particular, where Christina's hands were high treble and low bass, and Michelle's were roaming all around in between.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if it's going to sound complimentary, but at times it almost is as if your hands were predators, you know, pouncing one on the other.
Yeah, it's wild.
Quite spectacular. Is that a piece you think you'd record?
Oh, we would love to. We would love to record a bunch of, actually... 20th century or contemporary music. We love new music. So
you have started recording. You made your first recording in Bremen in Germany.
Yes.
And it has Mendelssohn, Brahms, Mozart, Schubert, and then Manuel de Falla, Maurice Ravel, and the Ludoslavsky Paganini variations, which you don't get to hear too often, but you have put those on video, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so what would you look forward to as your next step after this weekend, playing with the Madison Symphony?
Well, after this, we head back to Philadelphia, where we did our undergraduate work at the Curtis Institute of Music. But we'll be playing this very Poulenc concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and we're very much looking forward to that.
Well, I'm sure the audience will be looking forward to that also. You come back to Madison in your orbit occasionally, I assume?
Yes, occasionally. We loved coming back here.
Well, as far as passing your talents on to the next generation of players, do you teach as a set when you teach?
We like doing that. We've actually given master classes together, both
for duos and for solos and various chamber groups. And as usual, we kind of have to sense where one of us ends and one of us begins and takes over, just like now. But that's always a nice project for us to navigate.
Now, if you were to sit down at the piano and you just idly start playing, what's the most likely thing that would come out?
It would be different each and every time, I think.
Do you have a favorite piece, though, that would just not be something you'd play in a concert or record?
Maybe. I mean, both of us happen to like Bach as our favorite composer, so perhaps something of his.
Well, you have plenty of company in that regard. I mean, that takes you right back to Glenn Gould and the Goldbergs,
yes,
doesn't
yes.
it? So that's that is something we might look forward to sometime, is hearing you play some Bach.
Oh, yes. I'd love to.
And are there piano forehands arrangements of Bach?
There's several concerti, actually. Bach.
Well, of course, you have those, yes, right.
Yes. And there are a few arrangements, and Jesu, Joy of Man's Desire. And,
oh, I suppose, yes, probably. Some of the little greatest
yes.
hits, right.
Yes.
Well, thank you for coming in and sharing your 20 fingers, four hands, and dual ideas with me this afternoon. It's been a real treat.
Thank you.
It's been a treat for us, too.
And we'll look forward to hearing more about the performance this weekend with the Madison Symphony. It's Christina and Michelle Naughton, who hail from Wisconsin, from Madison, and they will be playing the Poulenc 2 Piano Concerto. And also on the program will be the Kodály Galanta Dances and Schubert's Great Symphony, the C Major Symphony. And those concerts with the Madison Symphony at the Overture Center for the Arts this Friday night at 7:30, and Saturday night at 8:00, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30.